My name's Dan Halverson. I'm part of the Augustana Lutheran Church group that's here. You've probably seen some of us around, and some of the kids are up in the balcony here, and more people will linger in. And I'm a physiologist at the University of Minnesota. And if you're unfamiliar with what a physiologist does, it's really a scientist that looks and studies at how the body functions. And my major area of research is really on health status and human performance. So I cover the whole continuum. We just got done testing the United States Olympic speed skating team, and I'll talk about them a little bit. We have a very large grant at our lab. Our lab is called the Laboratory of Physiological Hygiene and Exercise Science at the University of Minnesota. For those of you who might be from Minnesota, you might have heard that lab, or at least you might know the following story. The lab was started by an individual by the name of Ansel Keys, who came from the Harvard Fatigue Lab. And at Harvard University, the Harvard Fatigue Lab was actually started by corporations who wanted to minimize fatigue in their employees. So it's got some interesting history, and Harvard decided not to continue in the realm of physiology and lab research, so all the physiologists who were in that lab back in the early 30s went to different labs around the world. And our lab at the University of Minnesota is one of those surviving physiology labs. And so one of our functions is really to deal with the whole aspect of aging, fatigue, health, fitness, some very particular diseases, diabetes, heart disease, obesity. And so that's where most of my research goes. And being in a secular university, I treasure opportunities like this of talking about health and fitness in a Christian stewardship format. So my family and everyone from Augustana has been having a very nice time here. It's just a lovely spot, and many of you have probably been here several times. It's my first time here, so it's particularly delightful for us, and we don't have to go back till Monday, though there are some of our families leaving today on the bus. So this is set up as very informal. I'm hoping you're here because you might have some individual questions or some curiosities, or you're just kind of interested in the whole concept of Christian stewardship and health and fitness. And so I've got some things I definitely want to cover, but if there's a question at any point, go ahead and raise the question, and that's for everybody here on the main floor and for everybody up in the balcony too. So and as I tell most groups, if I don't start getting questions, I'll start calling on people, so just kind of be ready. The first question I'm actually going to pose for everybody is right here. It's very simple. It says, are you satisfied with your level of health, your level of fitness, and your level of energy? And as you ponder that for a second, I'll tell you a little story. One of the studies we're now completing in our lab, it's sponsored by NIH, which is the National Institute of Health, and it's called the Heritage Study, though we, in the study, call it the Couch Potato Study. Because the Couch Potato Study.
Oh,
because what?
I can't match with that.
I can't match with that. That's right. In the Couch Potato Study, we recruit a mom and a dad who is classified as being sedentary and three biological offspring that are sedentary. And this study is occurring in four different cities in North America. It's occurring in Quebec, in Phoenix, in Austin, and in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And you think it's been hard for us to recruit families that qualify as being couch potatoes?
No.
Well, sadly, the answer is no. It's not hard.
How you doing, Mark?
Typically, when we run an ad on TV, and I know some of the people from the Twin Cities have seen those ads, because we run the ads and we say, if you're a couch potato, mom, dad, don't really say it that way, but we say, if you're sedentary and you'd like to participate in a study, you will receive $1,000 for completing the study. Typically, on our voicemails the next morning, you think we have a couple phone calls or lots of phone calls, and it's just unbelievable. Our voicemail will be completely filled up with over 150 phone calls. Now, having said that, out of that group, we typically can only take about 1% who will end up qualifying for the study. But the fact of the matter is that right now in our society, we're at a, what we feel, certainly for those of us in pre-med medicine, we're at a real crossroad. And I'll explain that crossroad with the following numbers. In 1964, some of you might remember this, the Surgeon General put out a report that said, basically, smoking may be hazardous to your health. maybe hazardous to your health. We can get at all kinds of interesting ethical things about what's going on in that realm. That's a little bit beyond what we want to talk about here. But how many people know what happened last summer in 1996 and what report the Surgeon General put out that has numbers that are analogous to the smoking numbers?
But he said it is hazardous to your health.
Well, in context of smoking, That's true. I mean, we're finding some interesting things going on.
Say maybe it is.
It is hazardous, yeah. Let me share one more number. In 1964, approximately 67%, about two-thirds of Americans smoked cigarettes. I don't know if you knew that. Okay, do you know what the percentage is now, nationally? 20 would be nice. It's about 28% nationally. Different states have a little bit lower and a little bit higher. And actually, Washington and Minnesota are two of the lower states. Okay, two states that are fairly progressive on preventive medicine and health promotion. So think of this back in 1964, how old you were, if you were even born. And the Surgeon General said, hey, look, two-thirds of our nation is smoking. We think smoking may be hazardous. And that verbiage was actually very interesting because it was the lobby group of the tobacco industry that forced that verbiage. And that's really saved them up until now, and it's getting very interesting now. Anyway, back to the question at hand related to a bigger health issue. Last summer, in conjunction with the Summer Olympics in Atlanta, the Surgeon General put out another report where two-thirds of Americans were doing something very unhealthy. Who can tell me what that report was and what we're doing that was unhealthy?
Eating too much.
Eating too much, we certainly do that, but it was sedentary. Last summer, and most people haven't even seen this document yet, and we're working hard to get it out there, but the Surgeon General said last summer in 1996 that two-thirds of Americans are so sedentary that they're unhealthy and unfit. The same number as percent of smokers back in 1964. So what's our goal over the next 30 years? Is to say, look, Americans, let's wake up. If you think you want to perform at a high capacity, if you want to live a healthy, fit, energetic life, not only in the first three decades, but through decades 7, 8, 9, and 10, it's very important to recognize where fitness fits in. So, with all my short years of working in physiology, there's one statement I want you to leave with today. In fact, Jeff reminded me of this. Pastor Beebe is part of our group. He said he uses it in one of his sermons, and I was flattered by that. But the concept is the human body is designed to go. It's not designed to sit around. And so again, when you think two-thirds of our nation is sitting around as a sedentary classification, what do we have to do? So that's what I'm going to get into today. Okay, now, one of my favorite quotes is over here. We've already had fun with this because you thought it was said by Mickey Mantle. And it's credited to a lot of different people. I don't know if you can see it way over there, until the one from Bellamy. But I'll read it. And the quote goes like this. It says, if I had known that I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. Okay, so certainly if you remember what happened with Mickey Mantle two summers ago, that was very significant because you could probably say that his problem with his liver, was it a lifestyle issue?
No.
He was picking, or was it something that was totally out of his control?
He was alcoholic.
Well, he was alcoholic. We get into some things about how much that is lifestyle related, how much of it is disease related, et cetera, et cetera. But the point of the matter is that he was consuming the alcohol, and there were probably some better choices. All right, so back to the question, are you satisfied with your level of health and fitness? What I want to relate that to now is just a few concepts on stewardship. Because traditionally when we think of stewardship, what first comes to mind?
Money.
It's usually money. And if you go with a stronger, it's, what do you think of when you think of stewardship?
I think of service.
Service? Okay.
That's, to me, that's the number one thing in stewardship is service to your church.
Okay. And that would be a broader definition than how stewardship is typically brought up in context of most church settings. So here are a few thoughts on stewardship. Stewardship is faith in action to fulfill God's purpose in our lives. Stewardship is managing our God-given talents, gifts, and opportunities for positive results in our lives. And stewardship is our Christian action plan for our body, mind, and spirit. Now, what I'd like to tie in is this whole concept of body, mind, and spirit, and the whole person. But before I do that, let me just read a few things that I like to refer to in context of this whole concept directly out of the Bible. And I'll start with 1 Corinthians 6:19-20. And it goes like this: "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God? You are not your own. You were bought with a price, so glorify God in your body." Okay, good reference point to start with. A second reference point to refer to is this one out of 1 Thessalonians, and the verse is 5, or chapter 5, verse 23. "May the God of peace himself sanctify you wholly, and may your spirit, soul, and body be kept sound and blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. He who calls you is faithful, and he will do it." So that's another thought. Let me give you another one that I like to refer to. Whenever I work with people, either in a study setting or in a clinic setting, setting up an exercise prescription, and as you think about your satisfaction with your health, fitness, and energy level, what's the limiting factor?
Time.
It comes down to time, doesn't it? And so when you think of time and you think of the fact we all have the same number of minutes per day, 1,440 minutes per day, it really comes down to the fact, how do you manage that time? And how can you fit in what you need to fit in so that you can become satisfied with your level of health, fitness, and energy? Okay, we'll get into that in a little bit, but here's a reference to time from Ephesians chapter 5, verse 16. "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of the time, because the days are evil." Now, I'm convinced that Christ Jesus was a walker. He had to be. Was he a jogger? I don't know. Mark might know the answer to that one, but he was definitely a walker. He was a walker. Okay, a few other thoughts directly out of the Bible for us to think about here as we're getting underway. These thoughts come from Hebrews. It's chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." And I'm going to jump down to verses 12 through 13. "Therefore, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees, and make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed." And then moving over to chapter 10, verse 36. "For you have need of endurance, so that you may do the will of God and receive what is promised." Now, of course, whenever a physiologist hears that word endurance, what comes to mind for us? Well, you know, what comes to mind for us are specific things that we can measure for endurance. So I could literally go around the room here and I could say, how fit are you? How healthy are you? How energetic are you? And I could give you a number, but notice how the question stated. It's stated as to whether you're satisfied with your level of health, fitness, and energy. Okay? So again, back to the couch potato studies. I like to find out why people sign up for these studies, you know, and what people typically get out of these studies. So one of my roles is to interview the families before and after. And I'll typically have the whole family in our conference room, and mom and dad will be sitting there, and three children. And I'll typically go from one to one, and I'll say, what did you get out of this study? And just so you understand the context, what they had just completed would have been a 20-week study. They have to come into the University of Minnesota three times per week. They have to ride a stationary bicycle. They're hooked up to heart rate monitors. We know exactly how many calories they're burning, what wattage they're putting out. And so basically it's 60 sessions over 20 weeks. So over 20 weeks, which is at that 5-month point, you can improve your fitness dramatically. And we had dramatic results on the people. So they lost percent body fat. Their cholesterol went down. Their triglycerides went down. Their endurance went up. Their muscle power went up. All these things would occur with this training. But you also have to recognize some of the people coming in were really out of shape. They were true couch potatoes. So in the reference to endurance, we use a number called VO2 max. It's really how many milliliters of oxygen your body can process. As we're sitting here, each of us are processing so much oxygen. We're all pretty equal sitting. The bigger engines in the room are burning a few more calories than the smaller engines, but it's pretty close. The difference is when you get somebody doing a graded exercise test, and maybe some of you have had this done. You're either on a treadmill and you're hooked up to electrodes, or you're on a bicycle and every 3 minutes the grade might go up and the speed goes up. And I know Tim does this for his police physical and testing because it's required. If you're going to be in the police department, you have to have a certain level of fitness. So anyway, some of these people are so sedentary that they basically have a VO2 max of only 20. So this one lady had a VO2 max of 20. She was a mom and was really one of our best participants. Worked very hard, but at the end of the study, her VO2 max only went from 20 up to 22. Which is pretty typical over 20 weeks for most people. That's a 10% improvement. So as I asked her, I said, what did you get out of this study? She looked me right in the eye. She goes, it's not worth it. And so my whole staff behind me, they're writing down all these things. They're saying, it's not worth it. What does she mean? You know, I mean, she improved 10%, you know, and we showed that her percent body fat went down and her cholesterol went down, her HDL went up, all these numbers. I mean, we've got all these numbers in our research lab. And so, you know, I had to ask her, I said, well, you know, what do you mean? And she basically said, well, I don't feel any better. And so then I had to really step back a second and I had to really explain to her that she did go from 20 to 22, so she was improving over those 20 weeks. She didn't get worse, but she had to realize something. And so a question I want you to think about is the same question I asked her. I said, when were you in the best shape ever? In other words, what's her reference point? So in other words, back to your answer to this question, you answer this question of your satisfaction, of your level of health, fitness, and energy to when you're in the best shape, because that's your reference point. Now in our research lab, we see a lot of different people. We see people that are trying to get to the Winter Olympics in Japan next year, who are very, very fit. Their reference point is a VO2 max up in the high 80s. Remember, this lady's down in the 20s. Okay. So my response to her was to say, you've only gone from 20 to 22, you're going the right direction, but when we're in the best shape, and she said, I'm in the best shape I've ever been in right now. So was she satisfied? Well, she didn't have any idea. And so a lot of what I'm talking about today works well for us on main floor here, but you know who it's really for? It's for the kids up there. You know, it's saying to them, should we have a requirement of fitness to graduate from sixth grade? Okay, should we have a requirement of health? Should we have a requirement of energy? I don't think you have to worry about the energy. The kids have a tremendous amount of energy. What happens as you get into that third, fourth, and fifth decade, are you losing energy? And that brings up another whole issue of what's going on in our society on helping people as we get older maintaining energy. Well, there's a lot of tricks out there, and there are a lot of people selling things. And the other day we talked about truth in advertising. Well, if you want to get into truth in advertising in the realm of health and fitness, just turn on your infomercials at about 3 in the morning and see what they're selling. It's absolutely amazing. I mean, you can buy just about anything to make you either look younger, feel younger, ride some machine that'll make you look younger, or take some vitamin supplement that will make you younger, and it's pretty phenomenal, okay? So the bottom line to all that is, it really goes back to your reference point. I had a truck driver in a study once. I said, when do you think you're in the best shape ever? And he said, when, and he was a pretty overweight truck driver, probably weighed about 300 pounds. He said he felt he was in good shape when he would climb up into his cab, and he wasn't out of breath. Mm-hmm. And then second, when the steering wheel fit comfortably in front of his tummy and not under his tummy. So that was his reference point, okay? All right, now, let's move on with a few other things. I'm gonna read one more that I enjoy reading. I think everyone's heard this fact. This really came up in that movie Chariots of Fire that came out quite a few years ago, but it comes from Isaiah chapter 40, verses 39 through 41. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might he increases strength. Even youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Well, hopefully on the hikes we haven't had anybody fainting. But one nice thing about being here at Holden that I know I'm enjoying is getting out, getting the physical. And the physical is a very important part of that. But keep in mind that when we talk about stewardship, I think one of the goals of stewardship is to work on the whole person in terms of body, mind, and spirit. So I'm going to put a little diagram up here. And I'm going to say, when it comes to wholeness, a good way to think of wholeness is think of, in your life, how much effort goes into managing and being a good steward for your body? How much effort goes into managing and being a good steward with the mind? And how much effort goes into managing and being a good steward for the spiritual part? And then my favorite way of presenting this is saying, if you're living a Christ-centered life, that's the center of your efforts to be a whole person. Okay. Now, I haven't had many questions yet. Any questions or comments?
Yes. How do you assess that balance at one time in your life between body, mind, and spirit?
Boy, that's a real challenge. I would say part of the answer goes back to that initial question, certainly for the body, is are you satisfied with your level of health and fitness? And it goes back to the whole concept of the human body is designed to go. Are you taking time in those 1,440 minutes per day to get what is minimum to stay healthy and fit at the level you want?
Okay. A lot of us, myself at least, goes from guilt trip to guilt trip. You know, I'm not spending enough time on the spirit, I didn't go to church, didn't read this, or I'm spending too much time on my body, too little on this, or too much on my mind.
Yeah.
I'm always sort of dissatisfied, and I sort of iterate between one level of dissatisfaction and another. So are you satisfied with your level of health? Never.
Yeah.
I'm always unhappy. I'm always leaving something out.
And I think that's how a lot of us feel. I think that's why we need centers like this to kind of come in, rejuvenate, recharge our system, and then get back out there and get back into it. But I know I'm getting very nervous heading home on Monday checking my email. So we'll be back into it.
Right.
And as much as one likes to practice what they preach, I know it's difficult to schedule in, especially when we start talking about family times and all those. And so the challenge for all of us is really how efficiently can we use that time? Yeah. So before I come, let's...
What do you do about, if you can remember when you've been in the best shape that you've ever been, you know that every year you're farther and farther from ever being able to be there again. I mean, how do you, I find the older I get, the harder I have to work just to stay in one place.
And I would say at least you're trying. So you're approaching it and you're able to determine that difference. But you're right. If you had an extremely high level of fitness for whatever activities you like to enjoy when you were younger, you may never get to that level of fitness. But at least you're going to get to the level of fitness that under the constraints of your day, the time, all your other commitments, you can fit it in and at least you're thinking about it. And I'd say a major message, it's just that you've got to keep trying. You can't give up on taking care of all three of those aspects. And so you're right. I mean, back to the question, how big is your circle for each of those in your life? If you have to put those three circles as being your 1,440 minutes a day, how much went to sleep last night? Well, are you a 6-hour sleeper, 8-hour sleeper, 10-hour sleeper? Well, you can see as you take more time sleeping, that's more going to the body. But interestingly enough, sleep also goes to the mind. In fact, as a physiologist, I don't know a physiologist on this planet that knows why we have to sleep. We don't know. Okay. Yes.
I have a being I'm visually impaired and it's not easy for me to get out and do a lot of exercise, but I do try to get out with my guide dog here and walk at least 3 miles a day. But I have to spend quite a bit of time sitting around. I've tried doing other things, but it's very difficult for me to get involved in doing a heck of a lot more exercise and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm limited to what I can do.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that you have that 3 miles, because you set up your program to be 3 miles. Was that yours, or was it coming from the obedience school for the dog?
No, mine.
It's yours, okay. Because
I actually keep him exercised, but no, they set no parameters for me at all.
Okay.
It's up to me to do it, but I try to do 2 to 3 miles a day. Mm-hmm. And I hope, but it hasn't proven to me that it's helped so far, but because mm-hmm. I've had 2 angioplasty surgeries in the last year or so.
Okay, so you've gone through some things with angioplasty. Yeah. And the whole heart disease issue.
I just came off of one just before the July.
Yeah. There's a study being proposed with NIH right now about having people be given dogs to exercise daily.
Yeah.
Because what they've discovered is that one major factor in helping people continue a regular exercise program is having a pet.
Well, he keeps you moving, this dog, doesn't
he? We've seen it now with Eve.
We're going dilly-dally along the way when you're walking with him. I mean, he's got a good gait and a good speed, and he knows it, and I just keep up with him. And I'm not saying I have to do that sometimes, but I try to slow down a little bit. But,
sure.
But as a general rule, he sets a good pace. And,
yeah.
And I do about 3 miles in an hour, which is not that bad.
That's
fast,
good.
But
yeah.
Then I can do just.
Yeah, no, that's good. So you might agree with the idea if other people had dogs, they might get more exercise.
You bet they would.
So it kind of goes back to your question. Sometimes you're forced into getting exercise because you have to take care of something else. Okay.
Yeah, I used to be quite active in running, going around, and when I lost my eyesight 8 years ago, really threw me into kibosh.
Sure. Yeah. Question.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the biggest challenges I'm now assuming helping with my dad, who has Parkinson's, and he was just a natural athlete. And for him to buy that subject that if you don't use it, you lose it. And I wear a black hat. And I kept telling him, you've got to get on that exercise cycle just to maintain your level where you are today. And the funniest part of this is that he bucks me a lot. And then he said, well, I might pile off or I might fall getting on. And I said, well, you think about it and you solve it. And I came back and he said, I've got it solved. And he had his office chair. He has the exercise cycle in front of him. He holds on to the seat and he sits in his office chair and pedals. And he was so proud of himself, you know, because he was going to show me he could do. He was not going to do what I asked him
sure.
to do, but he did it where he felt safe. And
yeah.
So I felt like we won a major battle. But it's a very difficult one when a person has been naturally athletic,
yeah.
have not had to work on it, and now in the older age of their life, all of a sudden everything's falling apart.
Yeah.
And you're telling me I still need to exercise, but I don't feel like it. I want to sit. And,
right.
and this whole thing, it's really a battle of your mind, too.
Yeah. Yes.
The only way I can keep myself motivated to get the correct amount of exercise is to pay for a class, because then I have an investment that I'm so frugal, I could possibly miss the class. But if I'm just on a walking program on my own, I've got other stuff to do, I'll walk later.
Yeah. And fitness centers are banking on that. But that's good. I mean, you figured out what you had to do to get some regular exercise, okay? Let me pose another question for you. Right now in the U.S., I think everyone knows this, but the number one killer in the U.S. that's preventing people from living a full lifespan. And just so you know, we look at from a research point of view, a full lifespan right now in the U.S. is considered to be 40 million minutes. Okay, that's 76.1 years. Okay, that's the average lifespan men and women. 40 million minutes, that's all you get. Anything beyond that we figure is a bonus. Okay? Okay, so what's the number one cause of death in the U.S.? I think you know that. What is it? It's heart disease. Okay. And that represents approximately 50% of the deaths in the U.S. But what you may not know is what percent of heart disease is lifestyle related?
A lot.
A lot? Meaning 75%? 50%?
About 90.
Okay, I think I'm probably preaching to the choir here.
It's kind of a self-selected group.
It is a self-selected group. Research-wise, and remember, researchers typically go conservative. Right now, the number is between 55 and 65% of coronary heart disease and heart disease in general is lifestyle related. Okay, so now having said that, if you think of the four primary risk factors for heart disease, and this will get just a little scientific here for a little bit, so bear with me. Then we can
we'll run it back in, Dan, if you get too
Okay, so what I'm listing here is we're listing four primary risk factors for heart disease. And my question is exactly what I just said. What are they? And also recognize the fourth one was just added 2 years ago. Okay, so what's the first? And these don't have to necessarily be in any order.
Oh, overweight.
Okay, overweight is certainly a factor, but it's not a major primary risk factor. Diet is, but not a major primary risk factor. Smoking is a major primary risk factor. Okay, now hold on smoking a second, because I want to say two things on smoking. Recognize that smoking is a primary risk factor, not only in terms of primary smoke that you're smoking yourself, but also in terms of
secondary
smoke. Okay. This, pun intended, is a hot topic. Okay. In fact, I posed the question in promoting this presentation: is the whole issue at Holden Village? Should Holden Village be a smoke-free environment?
Yeah.
And again, I'm preaching to the choir here.
Positive up there.
Pardon me?
Proof positive up there.
On the mountain. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. On the falls, you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think there's some issues here that we can raise within the context of even our Holden Village experience. Because the data is so overwhelming, not only again on primary, but also on secondary exposure to smoke. Okay, so that is a primary risk factor for heart disease. People that are smoking are subjecting themselves to a much higher risk of heart disease. From a Christian stewardship point of view, what triggers as you see somebody who's smoking? Well, you know, I've been in this a lot. I don't want to put people in a guilt situation, but I want to show them the fork in the road. If you continue smoking, this is what's going to happen. If you quit smoking, this is what's going to happen. Now, a hand went up in the back, and I don't know who it was. No, maybe it was somebody stretching.
Realizing with another risk factor for more smoking.
Oh, the next one? Okay, well, let's go to the next one. Number two.
Alcohol. Genetics.
Genetics is actually not viewed as a primary risk factor. No.
Are you feeling modifiable or it's crazy? Because it is certainly a risk factor.
Well, yeah, and again.
You're looking for modifiable ones.
Well, I'm not even looking necessarily for modifiable ones. And this comes from the realm of epidemiology. It's a primary risk factor means that if you have those particular characteristics, your chance of having heart disease is extremely high.
That's genetics then.
Well, it turns out genetics is actually less than about 18% of the ballgame, so it doesn't even qualify as being a primary risk factor. Well, there are some other lifestyle factors. What?
Stress.
Stress related to what physiological? What happens when you're stressed?
High blood pressure.
High blood pressure, yeah.
Okay. So we've got BP here. Now, it turns out that you're at high risk if your blood pressure is greater than 140. Over 95 on three visits. That's our definition. You're at risk if you smoke actually anything, or we're trying to come up with a definition of how much exposure do you have in the course of a year to secondhand smoke. And that's even walking in and out of buildings. Because you know where the smokers are hanging out now? At the entryway to buildings. And it may be the same in Washington, but I know in Minnesota, you know, in the wintertime, you go from, you know, the inside to the outside holding your breath. Because you want exposure to secondhand smoke. That's a little extreme. Okay, so we need a third primary risk factor before we get to the fourth one. And it turns out it is cholesterol. Okay? And this is specific to your blood cholesterol. Now we're saying that you're at risk if your blood cholesterol is greater than 200 milligrams per cent. That used to be 240, 250, 220, now we're saying 200.
Won't you find that cholesterol is irrelevant? It's the LDL and the oxidation state of it, not the cholesterol itself.
Cholesterol is relevant, but the subfractions are more relevant.
And the population is relevant, but to individuals it's not.
Well,
we spend a lot of time trying to get people not to look at their individual cholesterol as meaning anything. Populations, it holds up, but for an individual, there's actually, in fact, more people having heart attacks with cholesterol under 200 than over 300.
Well, the asterisk is the following. I'll put it in parentheses, and maybe I'll answer your question. You'll feel a little bit more comfortable. But we're saying this HDL is a problem if it's less than 35.
Right.
Okay, so we're getting into something that's a little bit specific here, but we're looking at really ratios of cholesterol to HDL or vice versa, and we're also looking at the LDLs, the VLDLs, and then we're getting into the subfractions of those, and again, I don't want to bore you with the science, but we're getting into alpha, beta, gamma subfractions, and there's a gamma subfraction of HDL that's very relevant to heart disease.
Right.
And if you notice the cover of Time magazine, what was it, 2 weeks ago, looking at homocysteine, there's a very high correlation now of high levels and low levels of homocysteine, which is another byproduct of the whole protein metabolism, showing that people who have heart disease have low levels. Okay, so that's an issue. Okay, so now we've got three primary risk factors. These three primary risk factors have been used by the American Heart Association and everybody for about the last 30 years. 2 years ago, we added a new one. And this is all kind of a setup because you should anticipate what it is because it was in part related to the Surgeon General's report last summer. But the fourth one is, you just said it, is living a sedentary lifestyle. And we define a sedentary lifestyle as getting less than 2,000 calories of exercise per week. Okay, so if you figure that out just quickly, 2,000 calories of exercise per week is roughly how many per day? It's pretty close to 300 per day. And it's interesting that you came up with 3 miles for your walk because we usually use the rule of thumb you burn approximately 100 calories per mile. So by getting your 3 mile walk in, you're burning approximately those extra 300 calories per day. Okay? So now, having said all that, what do you do to change these things? Well, that gets into what I think is a very important topic for all of us to certainly be aware of in practicing a very Christian steward type lifestyle. Because we're saying you can do things related to blood pressure that lower blood pressure from a nutrition point of view, from a stress management point of view, and from an exercise point of view. In fact, most people don't realize that if you're a mild hypertensive patient, meaning you're a little bit borderline on having high blood pressure, you're far more effective and efficient instead of going on hypertensive medication to reduce your percent body fat, get some daily exercise, watch your salt intake, and start eating a better diet. Okay? That's a far better way to treat hypertension than to immediately get put on hypertensive medication. Or at least to be given the option that you should do that. Okay? Now, there's a little hat inside of me that gets cynical at this time because our medical system right now is designed in such a way that doesn't get rewarded, meaning is money exchanged for helping people lower their high blood pressure by increasing their exercise, by eating smarter, and by managing stress. And the cynical hat is, and the answer is typically no. Okay. how does the medical system get rewarded by putting people on hypertensive medication and particularly keeping them on hypertension medication so that they're going to be on it for a very long time and that they have to come in and get a regular checkup and make sure the dose is correct. Okay, so that's a little cynical side of me. Okay.
Although they're changing that a little bit, at least our health plan now, med checks and regular checkups are free. Mm-hmm. And there's co-payment if you go in for a problem.
Yeah. And are you here in Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's not happening in very many states, but there are a couple states that are doing that. And ironically, two of the states are Washington and Minnesota.
Well, managed care is leading to benign neglect, too. It's encouraging that, measuring things and not treating them.
Yeah, and everyone's hoping that managed care will stay with the concept of managed care, meaning let's track this information and help people on that end. What's happening certainly in Minnesota, I think it's the same out here, is that there's so much price point pressure on the managed care groups that, again, guess what's being tossed out? This whole concept, which is too bad because it's designed to make the concept work. And so there's a lot of debate on how that will occur. Let's move to cholesterol. How could you lower your cholesterol through lifestyle habits?
Eat less fat.
Eat less fat. More meals at Holden Village.
Aerobic exercise.
Yeah. Aerobic exercise helps dramatically. Okay, and the big plus for aerobic exercise is it helps you change that lipid profile. So you can increase the ratio of HDL to cholesterol by doing more aerobic type exercise. Okay.
What's the value for the LDL?
Once LDL start getting over 110, we start getting concerned. So we'll put LDL here greater than 110. Just so you know the verbiage here, this is HDL, it's not complicated verbiage. HDL is high density lipoprotein. It literally comes from centrifuging the blood. It's more dense, it's got more protein, it actually sinks more. LDL is lower density, low density. And there's actually a VLDL, very low density lipoprotein. So it's those fractions, but to tell you the truth, where most researchers are now is they're actually looking at the subfractions of each of those HDL and LDLs. Okay. So nutrition-wise, I'll tell you, certainly here at Holden, the meal plan I've been very impressed with. The five bean soup is tremendous, you know, and I'd have to say if we tested people before they came here and 4 weeks after eating here, I'd wager to bet their profiles would be healthier just by eating the food that's being provided here. So there is a dramatic correlation to cholesterol levels, certainly related to fat consumption, meat consumption. We're not saying totally eliminate those things, but just be cautious of those food items. So there is a recommendation now that we should all be consuming about 30% or less of our total calories from fat, and that's a good recommendation. So figure if you eat 2,000 calories per day, 30% of that is, you still get about 600 calories per day from fat. But out of that 600 calories, only 200 of those calories should be from meat fats, the saturated fats. And that's where our nation suffers a lot because we eat, unfortunately, very high quantities of saturated fats. Okay? So those are definite ways that we can practice a good stewardship with our health from a nutrition fitness point of view. And then the fourth one there, certainly one of my favorite ones to get into, and that's the sedentary lifestyle. How do you encourage people to get 300 calories of exercise every day? Well, let me share one study we did. In Minneapolis, there were two companies that just happened to be a mile apart. And we got a research grant to do a walking fitness study of these two companies. What we did is we changed the nameplates where they parked their cars. So the employees of Company A had to park at their nameplate of Company B, which is exactly a mile down University Avenue, and vice versa. So literally all they did is in the morning when they came to work, they'd park at the opposite company, they'd walk their mile to work, they put in their work day, and then they had to walk a mile back to their car. So now they were getting 200 extra calories. And of course, we did great timing on the study. We started it in May, so everyone was real psyched up for it. And we measured fitness levels every month. And guess what happened to their fitness levels? And this was the only change they had. Fitness levels started to improve, okay? So we started getting better in June and July and August. September, we're still cruising along, and then all of a sudden, what happened? We get in October, and those days start getting cold and rainy and wet and sleety, and pretty soon, Company A wanted to park at Company A. And basically, the whole thing fell apart, but that was part of the study, because we wanted to see who would hang in there and who would do it, and a couple people hung in there actually through November and December. But after that, the whole thing fell apart. But what happened to their fitness levels? A major point leaving here today is it doesn't take a lot. You don't really have to go out and become a marathon runner. Because the recommendation right now from the Centers for Disease Control and the American College of Sports Medicine is that we should all aim for 30 minutes of exercise every day of our life. That's the minimum requirement to pass this class. 30 minutes. Okay?
Have you dropped the intensity level?
The intensity, yeah, and that's a good question. I haven't really dropped the intensity level, but this recommendation is given from a health perspective, okay? So back to the initial question, I said, are you satisfied with your level of health? To become satisfied from a fitness point of view, we're saying for health purposes, all you need is 30 minutes of physical activity per day. Now, from a fitness point of view, you need a little bit more, and that's where the intensity comes in.
Oh.
Okay? Now, when you answer this question, are you satisfied with your level of health? How many make a distinction between health and fitness? You guys lump that all together, or do you say, yeah, this is a little bit different?
Okay? I don't know if there's any difference.
Well, there are a lot of health professionals that just lump it together. They say, look, health's the same as fitness and the same. But actually, if you look at it closely, I think most people in traditional medicine, their goal is to take you up to where you were before you got sick. Okay? Or if you had a broken arm, their goal is to take you to the point where the arm is at least healed. And the broken arm metaphor works out well here, because what typically happens if you have a broken arm or your kids have a broken arm, they wear the cast for how long? 6 weeks. As soon as the cast came off, what was that arm like?
Atrophied.
Yeah, atrophied, and it wasn't quite where it was. And if they're good medical practitioners, what will they do? They'll say, well, let's get you in some rehab so we know how strong your arm is. In fact, let's test the strength of your other arm versus the arm that was in the cast, and let's bring you up to at least where you were. You stay with us until we do that. Sometimes that's done, sometimes it's not, because what's happening in our cost control areas, they're forgetting a lot of the rehab.
That's right.
Okay. So they're forgetting that. Comment.
Take advantage of that aspect of it. The young person's going to have that cast on a little shorter period of time, probably.
That's right, because they will heal a little bit faster. And so that even puts more pressure on the person who's older, who's going through a rehab, again, using the broken arm, to make sure that they strengthen that arm, get that arm at a higher level of power output. Okay. All right. A few other things then. Another aspect of this is going into corporations and helping corporations figure out how many of their people are healthy and fit. Okay? How many are unhealthy and unfit? The same could be done if you're talking about a congregation. If a congregation is going to be working at maximum performance, how important is their level of health, fitness, and energy? Well, this is something that's brand new, and it's being impacted on a lot of Lutheran congregations around the country, where they're actually hiring nurse practitioners, RNs, health promotion specialists, to address this whole issue within their congregation. It's got an interesting aside to it, but it's really applying the whole concept of health promotion, not just in a corporation that's making so many widgets, but in a congregation that is doing what? It's doing one of the most important aspects in serving God, and hopefully making sure that every single working member of that congregation is achieving a high level of stewardship. Because we could add another bullet there. Are you satisfied with your level of stewardship? So my major point here today is the human body is designed to go if we don't work it on a regular basis, keep it healthy and fit, you're not going to get as much productivity out of your engine as you could. So the engine metaphor works out pretty well. But now we get into the whole issue of how do you do that? You know, how do you stay healthy and fit with the time factor that we have? And I'd say each person in this room has probably figured it out to some degree. You shared yours. You like to put money down and join that health and fitness class, and then you'll do it. But back to 300 calories a day, that's all we're saying you need to expend for a health point of view. So it's interesting that this question actually ties into mass transit questions. Okay? Because how do most of us get to work?
Car.
We walk into our garage, jump in our car. We don't get a lot of exercise because we hit the garage door opener. You use your arms a little bit. Your foot's on the accelerator more than it should be, and certainly on the brake more than it should be if you're going through rush hour. And so by the time we get to work, are you in a relaxed, healthy, fit state? And the answer is usually not. And so this concept of how do we get a whole country going from 67% that are sedentary down to a workable number is a big challenge. And I'm convinced a lot of people in this country are suffering health, fitness, energy issues simply because they're not taking care of themselves in context of the things we're talking about.
One thing that's making it worse, at least for me, is computers. Because I don't have to get up and go walk over to the other person's cubicle to talk to them. I can send them an email.
That's right.
And I sit in front of the computer and forget how much time has gone by, and I look up and it's been 4 hours, and you know.
Yep.
So I'm not getting the exercise I used to.
Yeah, that's really true. I had an executive a couple of months ago when I was doing his exercise prescription. I got to the key part of the exercise prescription where I say, okay, how much time do you have per day to do this? You know, we'd gone through all the pluses and minuses. I had all the numbers on them. And, you know, he looked at me and said, I've got 5 minutes a day. And at first I thought he was joking. And then he looked pretty serious. So guess what we ended up doing? He works downtown Minneapolis in the Pillsbury building. He's like on the 38th floor. And this is what we did. I said, okay, tomorrow you're going to have an extra cycle delivered. And every time you're on the phone, I want you to ride your bike. So for the last 3 months, he's been riding his bike. He says it's the best thing he's ever had. Everyone around him thinks he's a little bit crazy. But that's almost what it comes down to. You know, how can you be creative on figuring out how to take care of your engine? Because, you know, if you don't, especially with all the computer time, your health and fitness level will get destroyed rather quickly.
Could they walk upstairs a certain amount of time, you know, certain flights and then take the elevator?
Well, in fact, a lot of companies will have on their elevator bank, they'll say, walk two up and three down. Mm-hmm. Don't wait for the elevator. Walk two up and at least three down. So, I mean, they're doing things like that. But, you know, when you're in a hurry, you know, back to your question, we've got so many pressures on us to get things done. What gets neglected? Your own health and fitness. Yeah.
There's a statement that said older people, especially who choose to live on one level, should live in a house that has stairs.
Yeah. So they have to take the stairs.
So they have to take the stairs.
Yeah.
So they have to move. So they have to bend.
Yeah. Probably the stairs go down. That's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, they can.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. But they go up too. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Do you have any comments on age and fitness? And you could be fit at 60 and or 70 and so forth,
sure.
Versus not do the same thing that you did at 50. And is there any correlation between fitness and age?
Oh, sure. Are you kind of thinking of the famous Satchel Paige question where he said, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you were? You know, we do that an awful lot. We get into something called chronological age versus health age. And I'll tell you, that's hitting a lot of professions right now. One being police officers. How old can you continue being a police officer at a certain level if you still have the fitness? Airplane pilots are the same question. So there's a dramatic difference between just chronological age and health, fitness, and what we call functional capacity. And I think the rule should be written that if you have the functional capacity, you don't have to be restricted by your chronological age. So maybe you're getting a little bit into that. But another side of that is, how fit can you be when you're 80?
Yeah, that's my point, yeah.
I'll tell you, there are a lot of people out there. In fact, a good story from the United States Tennis Association right now is they have traditionally run national tennis tournaments through 5-year increments. So if you're a tennis player, I don't know if we have any tennis players here, but when you get to the next 5-year increment, you get pretty excited because you're one of the young ones. So when you turn 45, you're like, okay, the next 5 years, I'm one of the younger ones. Well, they've got a group now that is 85, that is approaching 90, and they've never had national championships for 90 or and over. And this group of guys, men and women actually, that are playing 85s and over, they want a 90 and over. And they're hoping they're going to stay healthy and fit, that will go to 95 and 100. So, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, how do you take care of yourself? What do you do?
Yeah, the question that I think is relevant for up here, but also I think that you haven't touched upon, is just how we as adults model fitness for our children and for the younger generation, and even for, you know, grandparents modeling it. And I think that's a part of the equation that needs to be talked about and addressed, because that's how, just as we pass the faith on that way,
that's right,
you pass a lifestyle on in the same way.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to overcome that predisposition.
Tremendously hard. That's a great comment that Mark made. Let me say this. Do you know, in all the research on exercise adherence, this is a really hot topic. The one thing that has the highest correlation to people who practice regular exercise, you know what it is? This is fascinating.
Whether their parents did it?
It's actually pretty close to that, but it's not directly that, but it's indirectly related to that. It's self-esteem. It's a person's perception of their own self-esteem that has the highest correlation of who is not a regular exerciser. Where does the self-esteem come from? I think that's home, that's church, that's community. And so it's exactly what Mark's saying. If the parents are saying, look, it's important for the kids to get out and go for a hike, let's go. Now we're laughing because we've got a couple of parents in this room from our Augustana church that we may have burned the kids out in that first hike up to Heart Lake. But hey, we bring up hike and the kids start running.
Oh, I was just going to say, I've noticed one thing, like when I'm in cross country season during the fall, like I'm a lot more mentally fit too, I'd say, during that time. Like I get better grades actually when I'm doing more exercise, I've noticed, and more, you know, self-confidence.
Yeah.
Self-esteem, and a lot more relaxed. And so the winter, when I'm less active, you know, my grades tend to drop even though I have more time, you know. It keeps you really mentally fit, too.
So you need to take up cross-country skiing in the winter time.
Yeah.
Let's go over here and then over there. Here.
Are there good studies connecting health and fitness? I know there were a lot of us who were kind of shaken when Jim Fix died of a heart attack while jogging a few years ago. This man was extremely fit and also very sick.
Yeah. Well, and just recognize that James Fix story. A lot of people admired his book and a lot of things he did, but realized that his father passed away from major heart disease at 45. So now it goes back a little bit to the genetics. Even though it is statistically, population-wise, around that 15% to 20%, unfortunately, he picked the wrong parents. But having said that, he also got into fitness very late in his life. And one thing, I think, back to what Mark is saying, is that what's happening now is that parents are being given information not only about themselves, but if you can retrieve information about your parents, so you can start building up this, what should our children be looking for as they get older? And what things can they make sure they practice, nutrition-wise, health-wise, etc., exercise-wise, so that they minimize the deck that they were dealt, you know, good or bad. Oh, another comment.
I think one of the things that we can do is to make it easier for people to bicycle places, to have bicycle racks, to accept bicycles, to have showers at businesses.
Yeah.
The people, when I ride my bicycle into a doctor's office, people are often impressed because they're not, they don't expect people to bring bicycles
That's
into
really
the doctor's
good.
Office.
Yeah.
And I ride into church.
That's good.
We're on a hill. If you know Tacoma, there are hills right on the Spencer Day.
Yeah. That's really good.
Find a way to get exercises to live on a hill.
Yeah, that's right. Going up and down, up and down.
And if you're taking a bicycle off there, you're exercising.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Another thing is to live not far from a place where you can walk to or bicycle to get your groceries rather than having to go a long distance to drive. To think in terms of the possibilities that you can carry either on a bicycle or in a cart or on your back, your groceries, rather than you have to take a car. Yeah.
And if you travel to Europe, you see what they do.
Yeah.
And I've got a slide of a Norwegian lady who's 75, and she's on a kind of a push pedal bicycle. And she would go 3 miles a day, one out a day, but she would go 3 miles to the grocery store, 3 miles back for a 6 mile round trip to pick up her groceries. And I've got this picture of her smiling on this, and I talked with her on when I had the occasion to take that picture. In fact, my wife and I still debate who actually took the picture. But I love to show that to groups because I know people who will get in their car and go 3 blocks to the grocery store. And not only that, but when they drive, they want to pick that front parking spot right by the door of the grocery store and park in the back. So we've got a lot to learn from the Europeans. And I know another comment on that is in Oslo, Norway, downtown, they've got these big signs that say bicycle path. Well, how many of our big cities can we go into that it's very convenient to bicycle downtown? I mean, in Minneapolis right now, they're having a big debate because they want to restrict bicycles from the Nicollet Mall. I don't know if the Minnesotans in here are aware of that, but it's a huge deal right now. I mean, the biking clubs are going crazy. The Nicollet Mall is perfect for bikes, but the buses, you know, are trying to say, look, get these cyclists out of here. So we've got some things to do on there.
We can also think in terms of traveling differently. I mean, we just came back from our 14th European bicycle trip, my husband and I. Mm-hmm. He's 74. And we aren't traveling as much as we used to. But it's a wonderful way of seeing the world. And if you can do it that way, it's much more exciting than just having to climb on the bus and getting off to eat some scrumptious dessert someplace and climbing back on again. Or it's and we come back feeling we've never been sick.
That's really good. That's a good comment. I'm a little sensitive to time. If there is one more comment, I'll take that. And I just have one quote to read from George Burns.
I had a question. Can you comment briefly on the zone diet and the high glycemic index diet?
You know, there are parts of the zone diet that I like. And this whole glycemic index is basically saying minimize the simple sugars. Right. I think that's good. I think if you certainly practice that, you're going to avoid the, quote, the sugar high. There was another book several years ago that came out called Sugar Blues. It was basically the same concept.
Right.
So, you know, he spent a lot of text getting into that, but I think in concept it's good. I think he gets a little bit off on saying that sugar's bad. I mean, sugar isn't bad. You just have to watch your intake of carbohydrates. So I could spend a lot of time on answering that question, but in a nutshell, you know, if you avoid the simple sugars, you're a lot better off. But make sure you're eating plenty of carbohydrates because still about 55 to 60% of your diet should be carbohydrates. So if you're not getting enough calories here in the village, you know, make sure you head over to that bread and pick up some more of those carbohydrates. So, and we can spend a little bit of time afterwards talking about that if you want. Let me finish up with one quote from George Burns. If you're a George Burns fan, you'll enjoy this. Maybe you've already heard it. He said the following, with a little luck, there's no reason why you can't live to be 100. Once you've done that, you've got it made because very few people die over 100. Okay, my final comment, I just hope with this last hour you're feeling maybe a little bit more refreshed and renewed as a whole person, and you'll think in terms of your body, mind, and spirit. Certainly when you get back to where you spend most of your time out of Holden Village.